Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Josh Ute.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, the manosphere continues to influence young men online. We're going to talk about some of the problems with that and the rise of the gentle manosphere. I don't think I'm saying that right, as an alternative, but we're going to take a look at it and how we as Christians might engage with sort of both movements and how they're defining manhood. And then with Earth Day being on Wednesday the 22nd, we're going to chat a bit about creation care as an act of worship and how Christians can and should think biblically about the earth God has given us. All of that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. Gentlemanosphere. That doesn't sound right. Gentlemanosphere. Gentleman. I don't know where the inflection
goes.
It reads nicely, but it doesn't. Anyway, hi everyone. Welcome to Engaging Culture. I don't think I'm going to get this right, so we're just going to move on. Josh, hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm struggling with a word at the moment, as you may have noticed.
That's fine.
But I am really interested to hear what the best thing you saw this week was.
My daughter does the cup song. So have you ever seen Pitch Perfect?
No.
Well, you're missing out. You'll love it. I say that with low expectation that you will, but it's great vocals.
Sure.
It's,
okay.
The music's fun.
I can enjoy that.
Well, she does a song where she's like moving a cup around and singing a song.
Got it.
So Dahlia begins to show us last night how to do the syncopation with it.
Okay.
And I end up getting it. And so we sat there for probably 30 minutes playing, doing this to different songs. So there's like a specific song in the movie that she does this whole routine with.
Okay.
And so she started doing with All American Rejects, Swing Swing.
Wow.
And we made it work. And
oh
it was like, it was super fun. It was very silly. Nothing important, but it's just that joy of going through it. And while my son was on the struggle bus.
It's like, what are we doing here?
He was trying so hard, and he kept getting so frustrated when we were doing it with him that he went to his room for 20 minutes and set up a camera to film him doing it so that he could see where he was going wrong.
Oh,
it was
man.
So funny.
All right, well,
what
he's
a great,
not giving up. He's putting some effort into it.
No, and this morning he was able to pull it off.
Wow.
So,
okay. Yeah. There we go. Well, I'm at least curious now. If I find a cup, could we do a little live demonstration of this afterwards? I don't know.
It's way better on video. My wife's got a video. I'll send it to you.
All right, great. Because now I'm just like, okay, well, all this time is being spent and it's this fun. Okay, you got me interested. All right, I'll take a look. You're supposed to ask me about mine.
Oh, I don't care though. No, all I'm just right, kidding.
Well,
what's your best? What's the best thing?
We're off to a really good start here. All right, my best thing is quick. My son Matthew and I went to a track meet at 12 Bridges High School on Saturday to watch a few different kids who we have various connections with through family things and community involvement and whatnot. And track meets move a little slow, but watching the kids run is fantastic, and a lot of kids just very, very impressive. In fact, family who attends here, their son, who I think is a junior, broke 5 minutes in the mile, which is
killer.
But one of the most impressive running feats I've ever seen in my life, a senior at 12 Bridges High School ran the 2 mile in 8:58. It was incredible to watch. He went out in 105, and I turned to Matthew. I'm like, there's no way he can keep this up. And he pretty much did the entire way. How you can be that fast.
That is wild.
Yeah. 420. I mean, he went out in 431 and in 427 to run a negative split after a 431 mile. I'm like, why do I even bother running? Like, I am lollygagging and walking compared to that. But it was amazing. As I've said on the show before, I help coach middle school track distance runners, and I'm really excited for my son to go to high school, to be able to go to these high school meets and not only watch him, but watch some of these kids who just are incredible and so talented, and
that's amazing.
Pretty fun to watch. So, yeah, it was awesome. Hopefully first of many high school track meets over the next several years. Another kid I was there to watch, he and his teammates, 4x400 from Lincoln High School, broke their school record, and
awesome.
The kid I was there to watch crushed it on his leg, which was pretty fun.
That's awesome.
We'll be right back. We are back, and the other day, an article in the Dispatch caught my attention, and the headline was The Rise of the Anti-Manosphere. And if you're not familiar with the Manosphere, it is a collection of podcasters and social media stars who push a particular view of masculinity. Now, to take a further step back, I think we're living in an interesting time right now, Josh, where a lot of young men are pretty lost. There's plenty of cultural commentary about this. And a lot of young men are looking for advice and guidance on what does it mean to be a man? How can I grow as a man? How can I live a life of significance? How do I deal with loneliness and these types of things? And men are looking all over the place for advice, which is not a bad thing. No. The challenge is sort of this quote unquote manosphere is not exactly guiding men in a healthy direction. Many of these individuals push wildly misogynistic views. They get lots of attention because they're big personalities and they promote extremist ideas. And a lot of their critics even suggest these men likely don't even believe most of the things they're saying. Mm. They're just saying it because it's extreme and crazy. And this sort of vision of manhood that they push is like being a man is about making tons of money, having big muscles, driving expensive cars, sleeping with as many women as you can. And it's this very sort of hyper-individualistic, dominating kind of worldview where success is, do people respect you? Are people afraid of you? Do you have power over others? Certainly power over women. And kind of your primary goal in life is to make as much of yourself as you possibly can. I shouldn't be surprised anymore, Josh, by like just crazy stuff on the internet. But I started reading about this sort of red pill idea within the manosphere. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not familiar. I'm familiar with the red pill reference in The Matrix.
Right. So it is a reference to that. And the idea is that men need to take the red pill to wake up to the reality that men are actually the oppressed gender. And in a world of feminism, men are being discriminated against and need to sort of stand up and reclaim their rights, which is insane. Like, that is possibly the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life, that men are the oppressed I say that as a man. I'm not anti-man. Right. I'm actually very pro equality of genders. Yeah. And this notion that men are being oppressed. I'm speechless. All right. Moving on.
Yes.
What are some challenges, big picture, between a Christian worldview and a lot of what is being promoted in the so-called manosphere?
Well, we've got the Sermon on the Mount to really get us going here, where the meek shall inherit the earth, where Jesus is teaching humility, he's teaching meekness, he's teaching gentleness, he's teaching caring for one another, and to not, you know, pretty much everything anti what you just described the manosphere as being. And so as Christians, there's this really big dilemma of what does it mean to be a strong man, and without going into this manosphere world, because it's so destructive. It really turns everything into that we are the center of our universes, we are the center of our worship, and that is not the correct place to be. It is a really interesting connection. I've actually had quite a few conversations with guys over the years about this red pill concept, now that you described it, in a little bit less extreme ways, but of, you know, classrooms are set up to be everybody needs to be very calm, and so then the boys in a classroom don't have anywhere for their energy to go, and their style of play is outlawed on the school playground, and so, you know, they've got all this pent up energy that they can't get aggression out, they can't do all these other things, and that's kind of desensitized a lot of guys into believing that the things that men should do are actually bad. And I can get that.
There's some
legitimacy to that point. Where I don't go is that they're the oppressed gender. That's just silly talk. But I think this idea that we have this gap within a lot of our Christianity of we've either made it way too feminine for a lot of guys, and to where they only see the nurturing side of Christianity and not the other side.
Yeah.
And we have this gap of, well, then they put Jesus into, well, he went in there with the whip and started beating people up. It's like, well, no, that's not exactly what happened. You know, and so it's like, okay, there's a more holistic view of what it means to be a man, who's an image bearer of God.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think trying to figure out what that realm really is really important. But when we bring in these outside secular voices into it, we really muddy the waters and we begin to not see God. In the midst of this, we begin to see our own agendas in the midst.
Yeah, that's certainly right. And I think there's also an element here where the need that has been created is legitimate. And I actually don't even know that I'd say the need has been created. I think the need for men to feel like their life has purpose, for
yes.
Feeling like they understand their place in the world, for wanting to contribute, and even wanting to be respected, these are not inherently bad things. And so I think to be able to go, men are struggling, men are lost, men do feel that a lot of society, church, classrooms, etc., are a little more feminine and aren't allowing them to lean into some of their innate characteristics. Like, okay, like that's a legitimate challenge, and those are legitimate conversations worth having, and there are places to make adjustments based on that. But sort of to your point from earlier, where we get into trouble is now we're trying to meet that need through some really unhealthy healthy channels. And the more and more I read about sort of manosphere content, to be honest, it is just a monument to male insecurity, if you ask me.
Absolutely.
Because oftentimes we respond to feeling insecure, to feeling not valuable by resorting to hyper control or trying to sort of puff ourselves up to appear a certain kind of way.
Yeah.
And that does not get us anywhere good. That is ultimately very, very unhealthy. And a Christian vision of manhood is certainly more than kind of, you know, meek and mild Jesus. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that there is more. Jesus is a well-rounded person and man, or and God, excuse me. So there's a lot more to Jesus. So if mm-hmm. all we're thinking of is, well, the totality of my Christian life is this,
right,
we're missing something. That mm-hmm. Jesus actually has quite a lot to teach us about how to be an emotionally healthy man, how to be a man who leads others, to how to be a man who is for others. And that element is so different than what the manosphere would teach us, which is you need to be respected, you need to be powerful, people need to know not to mess with you, where Jesus would say, no, actually, real strength is found in giving your life away for the sake of others. Right. Real strength is found in using what you have to bring blessing, as opposed to trying to maximize whatever for yourself.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to where are you drawing your confidence from? If you're drawing your confidence from what you can do as opposed to who God says you are, and the security in Christ that we have, then you're going to get all sideways all the time. Because what's going to happen to these guys when financial things come up?
Yeah.
And like, well, you know, to be a man means to be financially successful. Well, you just lost every penny you have. Are you no longer a man? You know,
not to mention, side note, a lot of these manosphere stars are promoting financial products and investments that are wildly dangerous.
Yeah,
so, anyway,
super high risk.
Yeah.
You know that. You build muscle now, but when you're in your 70s, that looks a lot different. You know, are you no longer a man when you age? Like, there's a lot of problems that if you put your confidence and you put your self-worth based into these things, they're all fleeting. They're all things that pass away.
And it's continual insecurity.
Yeah.
Right? You base your identity on those things. You're never going to be comfortable in your own skin.
No.
And I think insecure men are just a problem waiting to happen, first and foremost for themselves. And I say this as someone who has struggled with insecurity a lot, so I'm not casting blame on others. But you go, you're constantly insecure, and you turn your focus in on yourself, and you just start behaving in ways that are really not degenerative, that aren't going to build community, that aren't going to build relationships, and just become very self-focused. And that just, if anything, it increases the loneliness. It increases that sense of what's my place in the world. And I think that's part of the challenge here, is sort of what the Manosphere is selling is a recipe for continued insecurity, continued loneliness, and continued misery, I would say.
Absolutely. And then I look at, put that into contrast to the men in our church that I deeply respect. And they vary all over the place as far as their interests. Some are outdoorsy, some are indoorsy, some are, you know, some have money, some don't have money. But what they all have is this gentleness about them and this calm demeanor about them that while they can be super fun and super, you know, loud and outgoing, when it comes down to crunch time, who do they turn into? They turn into somebody who's, you know, a stable rock for their brother, that they turn into this person that can really gather around somebody and walk with somebody in their pain and not shame somebody in their life. Like it's, there's this completely anti-manosphere view of them because, you know, on one hand, it's like, well, yeah, they're doing all very manly things. They like to shoot guns and drink whiskey and, you know, do, hopefully not at the same time. But
hopefully not.
Hopefully not. But then they also have this tender side. And the Manosphere would say that tender side needs no place here. Like, just be man up.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, we are created beings with the full range of emotions.
Yeah.
And when we lock out a whole side of our emotions, we're actually denying the person that God has created us to be.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's absolutely right. And that, I don't know, this sense of anything feelings-oriented, anything service-oriented is weakness.
Right.
Is, gosh, I just, it is so unhealthy and just leads nowhere. And in so many ways, is just antithetical to the gospel, which, I mean, we are called to self-denial. We are called to lay down our lives. We are called to not to be served, but to serve. And these are beautiful Christian ideas that lead to the abundant life Jesus talked about. And it is such a contrast to, I think, these, again, these insecure visions of masculinity that we're given. But I was intrigued by that Dispatch article, Rise of the Anti-Manosphere, because it started talking about the word that I cannot pronounce, gentle manosphere. And it said this: it has a straightforward mission for men today. Raise your hand when you need help, get off screens and into the real world, build communities with partners and friends, take risks, express yourself emotionally, and look after your physical health. And a lot of the key figures in this movement are kind of all over the map. The one who I know for sure is a Christian is David French, who I've benefited from his writing in both short form and long form for many, many years. Arthur Brooks, who's a happiness researcher at Harvard and has done a lot of really good work. Richard Reeves, he wrote a book on manhood that I found pretty beneficial. Not a Christian, as far as I recall, but it's a bunch of these folks. And I think you can look at these values and you go, okay, number one, asking for help is actually not weakness.
No.
It is vulnerable. Yes.
But it's also rational.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's rational. And I mean, I feel like I'm in conversations like this on a fairly regular basis as a church staff member, but even as just someone involved in church, because people that are most involved in church tend to be helpers by nature.
Yeah.
And I often have to remind people, do not rob your friends, your colleagues of the blessing of helping you.
Yeah.
Right. And remember what you would do if the roles were reversed.
Absolutely.
Right? So if we're stuck in this world of, oh, you know, I can't raise my hand if I need help because that's weakness, we are not only going to be unhealthy, but we are depriving others of truly the blessing. And I don't mean blessing as in like they get a reward for it. I mean the blessing of like, wow, that was really great. I was able to, Josh, you were having a hard time with this or that. I was able to help you. Gosh, what a gift to get to do that. Right.
Yeah. I had a mentoring pastor a while back when pretty much called me out, and not but pretty much he rebuked me
directly called you out.
directly rebuked me actually in front of others because it was necessary, but I had rejected a gift from somebody in the church because it was money, because I felt really uncomfortable and like, I'm not doing this for money and I don't want to take this person's financial gift to me.
Yeah.
And the mentoring pastor said, that is evil. said, you, what
evil.
You,
wow.
Because he said, what you are doing is they are trying to be a blessing to you and you've robbed them of that opportunity. That, wow. How dare you?
Wow.
It's like, yeah, they just want to bless you and yeah. you rejected it.
Yeah. Reject. I mean, and what a powerful example of like, yeah, we reject help because we feel like, oh, and, yeah. and we feel sort of like we're doing the right thing by doing it.
Oh, 100%. I was full of pride and saying, look at how pious I am. Yeah. You know, at this 22-year-old get and yes. and he rightfully called me yeah. out and I will never forget that. And from this, like, from that point on, anytime somebody wants to bless me with something, whether yeah. it's like, hey, I'd like to buy you a coffee today or yep. take it, like my first response is just thank you. Yep. Not, oh, no, you don't yep. need to do that. It's like, no, they really want to.
Receive it with gratitude.
Receive it with gratitude. Yeah,
that's, and that, because that's what we want when we offer to help someone else.
Correct.
And we don't have a lot of time to get into the rest of these super deep, but I think that idea of going, okay, let's get off screens and into the real world. I think that Beautiful. Idea of where is your vision for manhood coming from? Is it coming from some guy with a social media account? Which there can be good advice to be found on social media, I'm sure. But is it an embodied community with somebody yeah. whose life you can observe and who can actually help you grow in the fundamentals of what does it mean to be a man? I mean, build communities with partners and friends. There we go. Embodied community. Yeah. Take risks. There is space for us to grow in our resilience and our grit and our willingness to tolerate failure that I think benefits lots of people. expressing yeah. yourself emotionally. Jesus did this, yeah. right? Jesus was emotionally in tune, which we forget that aspect. And he demonstrates the whole range of emotions in a healthy way. And then look after your physical health, which that's be a whole segment on its own, but just to kind of go, hey, if you take care of yourself, not yeah. for the purpose of showing off your big muscles or whatever, but going, okay, this is part of being a healthy man in the world. And this is something we've talked about on the show before. Mm-hmm. I think that can be very, very beneficial.
Look, I got up at 5 a.m. today to go to the gym, and I am dragging Heine because of that. But honestly, it is the – we need to take care of the bodies that we have. Yeah. But I think the last thing I would say on this is when we start to follow personalities on screens, we don't have any idea who they are or what their lives are actually like.
It's true.
Meanwhile, I have the – privilege of being friends with somebody like Keith Ritchie,
yeah.
who you spend any time with him and you can't help but admire him for his stability, for his spiritual guidance, for his wisdom, yep. for the fact that he can also be fun and yep. he can joke around and, you know, he's this very well-rounded person. And I only get to know that because I'm in relationship with him as a friend.
Yep.
And there are tons of guys.
Yep.
There are tons of women in this church that women, if you just were able to be in relationship with them, you would grow in appreciation of how they conduct their lives.
Yeah.
Men growing in appreciation of how the other men are conducting their lives, that'll draw you in, which is why community yeah. groups are so valuable, why men's ministry is so valuable, women's ministry is so valuable.
Yeah.
It's all connected there.
So I think, yeah, I think that idea of going, okay, let's be careful, first of all, with this manosphere type content is wildly destructive, as we've talked about, and lots of people are writing a lot about that these days. But more than that, what we need is that embodied community.
Yeah.
So if you're a man looking for a vision for manhood, perhaps you didn't have a good example growing up, or perhaps you're just in a season of life where, man, you just need it. Like, get around other men.
Yeah.
Women, get around other women. Be an embodied community with Christ at the center where you can see guys like Keith Ritchie. You can see guys who are seeking to follow Christ and actually live a holistic life of being a man, who is seeking to honor God and a man for others. Like, that's a Christ-centered vision of manhood that's going to lead to health.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back.
At the time of this recording, it is Earth Day. What did you do to celebrate, Brian?
I came to work.
Oh, but you drove an electric car.
I did drive an electric car.
I did not. I drove a Tundra. From 2008. Oh, yeah.
Did it pass its smog test?
What smog test? Hey, so, know, anywho, mind your business. today, we will take a look at how caring for God's creation is actually an act of worship. When asked about environmental issues, Billy Graham said the following: "Why should we be concerned about the environment? It isn't just because of the dangers we face from pollution, climate change, or other environmental problems, although these are serious. For Christians, the issue is much deeper. We know that God created the world, and it belongs to Him, not us. Because of this, we are only stewards or trustees of God's creation, and we aren't to abuse or neglect it. The Bible says the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it," Psalm 24:1. "When we fail to see the world as God's creation, we will end up abusing it. Selfishness and greed take over, and we end up not caring about the environment or the problems we're creating for future generations." Well said, Billy Graham.
It's a great quote, and I think it's really unfortunate that when we think of creation care, we often go to sort of secular environmentalism movements, which are, you know, there's some good elements to that approach, but there it's pretty problematic in a lot of ways as well. And I think a lot of Christians, rightfully so, raise some questions about that. And I think, but for us to sort of go the other way, where we neglect the reality that creation truly is a gift from God.
Absolutely.
And it is meant to be stewarded. We don't worship creation. Creation care is not the highest Christian value by any stretch, but also this sense of we don't care about the world or you know, environmentalism is not important is really unfortunate. Because again, God gave us this gift for us to steward. And as the Reverend Billy Graham said, it's not just for us, it's for future generations as well.
Absolutely. In Genesis, we see the creation story. In each step of that creation story, God says it is good.
Yeah.
And our profession, our call, our vocation from the very beginning, even before sin entered the world, was to care for the... To care for creation, not to dominate it, but to have dominion and responsibility, to make sure that it stays in good care and doesn't grow without any. And I think that's a really important piece, that from the very beginning, we receive creation as a way to worship God.
Yeah.
And it's a way for us to say, when we do the things that God has called us to do, we begin to worship Him. Now, we don't worship the earth.
Right.
So it's not about saving the planet to save the planet because the planet's the most important thing, blah, blah, blah. It's really about our obedience to God. Are we reflecting God's character with how we handle what really belongs to Him?
Yeah, and it's exactly that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it.
Absolutely.
Right, the Bible says. And man, you really want to take this a step further, and then we'll go back to this conversation. I just did a talk on the theme of temple throughout Scripture, and the idea of you know, what does it look like for what is the point of sort of temple imagery in different parts of the Bible? The Garden of Eden was the original temple. Mm. It was the place on earth where God and humanity dwelled together. And of course, sin entered the world and that fractured that connection. But not only was Eden the temple, but the language used for what Adam was to do to keep the garden and all of that, that's the exact same language used for like the priests in the temple later on.
Wow.
It was this idea of it is a priestly duty to care for this gift God had given him. And I don't mean to imply that creation care today is a priestly duty, but it highlights from the beginning, hey, Adam, this care for what I gave you is a really big deal and is a big part of our connection and your call as a human being on the earth.
Absolutely. So what changes in your thinking when you move from this idea that the planet is ours to this is God's and we manage it?
I think it increases the value, first of all, to go, when we deal with creation, we are dealing with God's stuff. Oftentimes, we try to separate these things, the physical world and spiritual world and everything else. But when you go, oh, wait a second, this is a precious gift from God. It's not just something that I have. And you go, okay, I don't think the response to that is like paranoia. I don't think now I need to like feel guilty anytime I use something plastic. Like, that's not the point. But to just go, the earth is a gift meant to be enjoyed. And part of that enjoyment is caring for it. Something I do not out of some sort of obligation or attempt to moralize this, but out of respect for the giver. How about you?
I view it a lot like our property that we live on. Now, I say property as if I have acreage. I don't. I live next to my new park. They're fine. But it's just a neighborhood. But when I don't upkeep it, it becomes less valuable to my kids. Yeah. It becomes less valuable to my wife. It becomes something that we don't want our friends to participate in. And we begin to just kind of let it run wild. It really does shape how we view our property. And so one of the things that shifted for me was I want our place to be a place of welcome. We want our home to be comfortable. We want it to be not beautiful so that we get accolades, but just pleasant.
Yeah, you want looking for to be pleasant.
Exactly. And so what we ended up doing is saying, Josh, you suck at lawn care. We have to hire somebody. And we did. And it's been the best decision for us, in all honesty. Now, do I die a little inside every time? Yes, I do. Because personally, I don't want to pay somebody else to do what I should be doing. But the reality is, I don't steward it really well because of time, because of responsibilities. You know, my days off are not the same as my kids, you know, all these kinds of things. And I recognized that the best move for me to care for my home was in partnership with another organization. Yep. Now, my wife gardens and she loves gardening. And so she will tend to the garden and care for it. And the satisfaction that we get from just being with God's creation and creating space that is pleasant and that is comfortable allows us to host people in our homes without feeling embarrassed, you know, and that's at a microcosm, obviously. Right. You bring that out to the full world piece, and we realize that it's not about making the world something into my image. It's about caring for what God created first so that we can continue to enjoy the gift that he gave us.
Yeah.
And he wants us to enjoy nature. Mm-hmm. He wants us to enjoy his creation. That's why he made it.
Yeah.
And so this act of worship is not about us. It's really about saying we want to care for this so that not only can we enjoy it, but our kids can enjoy it, that our neighbors can enjoy it, that our community can come together and really participate in the care of this.
Yeah.
Piece.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it all fits together. And you take that on a broader scale. And even, you know, a powerful argument for me, as I've thought through this topic, is the idea that actually creation care is part of how we love our neighbors.
Yeah.
That the effects of a lack of creation care disproportionately affect the poor. They affect refugees. They affect those who don't have the means to necessarily choose where they live. So to be able to go, okay, it's not about saving the trees for the trees' sake. It's actually about caring for all of creation so that the earth can remain a hospitable place. And just being honest, I think it's easy as wealthy Westerners to kind of live our lives sort of oblivious to that fact, that actually the choices we make and how we care for the planet really does impact the least of these in different places over the world, which once we get that idea, it can be inspiring to go, okay, no, I actually do want to love my neighbors around the world well. And part of the way I do that is by honoring creation.
Absolutely. So when we're honoring creation, how do we care for creation without drifting into worshiping creation?
I actually don't think that's that hard, because I think in so many things in life, you have means and ends, right?
Right.
The means of creation care is not the earth itself. It is not because the grass is sacred or the animals are sacred or anything else. All of these things are precious creations of God that God has, again, given us to care for. So to be able to go, no, the end is to know God and to worship God and to honor God. So that's really what it's about. And saying, all right, caring about the world around me is not some secular project to cause the earth to, you know, last longer than it otherwise would. It's actually a Christian project to say, no, we're stewarding this earth God has given us. And oh, by the way, we don't escape Earth. Like, that's not how it works. Yeah. We just had N.T. Wright here. Read all of his stuff. He'll remind us of what the Bible says, that we don't escape Earth to go to heaven. Jesus returns and brings about a new heavens and a new Earth. So that, man, that's just a whole other reason why creation care matters, not just for now, but even into eternity.
Absolutely. And I think we are reminded that if we are made into God's image, that our creation care would be the same as if we created something. When you, it's like buying a new car. When you buy a new car, you treat that thing better than you've ever treated any car you've ever owned, ever. And it's really kind of the same idea that if we were to view this as, if we are image bearers of God, that we are part of that creation, we are to steward that creation, we want to care for it the way that he did, not because we own it, but because we want to honor what it is that he's given to us. And I think this idea that we can really pursue things that help the environment or just care for the nature around our homes is really beautiful.
Yeah, so. that's absolutely right. And let's also remember, again, the future generations component of this, just the simple fact of what kind of a Earth do we want to leave our children, right? That is I talked about loving our neighbors in terms of loving, the poor around the globe, but also loving our children, loving the generations to come. These are Christian ideals. Yeah. We don't pursue them because they're environmentalist ideals. These are Christian ideals. Thus, part of how we pursue that, I mean, shoot, it has relevance to the last segment as well. We pursue the development of healthy Christian character and things like that for the sake of those around us and the next generation. Another thing we do, we honor, care for creation, not as an act of worship to creation itself, but as a way of honoring and worshiping God and then caring for those who are going to come after us.
Absolutely. Yep. So, you know, as we end this segment, creation care isn't a side issue. Yeah. It's a reflection issue, right? It's, are we doing what God is calling us to do? Are we reflecting his character? How we treat what God made says something about how we see him as well.
Yeah.
Do we see him as a benevolent father? Do we see him as somebody that doesn't care about the creation around him? I think we can all agree that we do see God as one who cares for those that he created. Yep. So we don't worship creation, but we do worship the creator. Yep. Amen.
Amen.
All right.
All right. We'll be right back. We are back, and we are going to end this episode with a game we haven't done in a while called One Has to Go. The way this works is we pick a category, we name several items from that category, and then our esteemed co-host has to pick of everything in that category. If you have to eliminate one has to go, which would it be? Josh, are you ready?
Well, I'm ready.
One has to go: pizza, burritos, or hamburgers. You cannot have one for the rest of your life. All iterations.
Probably hamburgers.
Hamburgers.
I know. I love a breakfast burrito to the point of absurdity.
Yeah.
And I've had great hamburgers, but I rarely am like, I need to have a hamburger today. Mm-hmm. And so pizza is a go-to in our household. Mm-hmm. So that'd be real tough to get rid of. And there's a lot of variety in pizza. But the breakfast burrito, I couldn't say no to that for the rest of my life. That's the downfall.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Now granted, vegetarian and Impossible Burgers and Beyond Burgers are fine, but you can do a lot more with a burrito and a pizza. So that's an easy one for me, getting rid of burgers. But even if I weren't, I would be with you on that one.
All right.
All right, what do you got?
Electricity, indoor plumbing, air conditioning. We live in Sacramento. Remember that.
Oh my gosh. All right. Do I want to be comfortable in my house? But all right, without getting too into it, what is the bathroom situation if you have no indoor plumbing?
Well, you can imagine you only really have two options, nature or outhouse.
Gosh, boy, that is tough. I mean, I feel like we got to have electricity, and not having running water would be really tough. But living in Sacramento without air conditioning, here's the bottom line. I feel like of the three, the one that is easiest to compensate for, as in you can just do other things to like make life semi-survivable, is air conditioning. Like, yes, it would be terrible, but you could have a great ice maker. You can drench yourself in cold water. There are things you could do, which would be far from ideal, but less of an inconvenience than the other one. Which would you get rid of those?
Oh, I would get rid of the air conditioner first. Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
No hesitation.
Yeah. All right. One has to go. Major League Baseball, the National Hockey League, the National Football League, or the National Basketball Association. And that means this professional sport is eliminated from your consciousness for the rest of your life. MLB, NHL, NFL, NBA.
You know, that is awful. And you should be ashamed of yourself.
I'm not. I'm very proud. The whole goal of this is for it to be tough.
Wow. I love the NFL, and there's only so many games that you watch per year. So that one stays. All right.
Okay.
Major League Baseball, it's 162 games. It's a lot of games.
It's a lot of games.
But it's also American pastime. There's a lot of nostalgia.
You see how much he's struggling with this? See, this is how this is how the game is played, folks.
And I love the NHL. I don't talk about it with a lot of people because there's not a lot of NHL fans.
Because others don't love because, the NHL.
So Lucian and I will talk about it quite a bit. Gosh, an NBA. Gosh, I don't know. I think right now in this season of life, I would probably say goodbye to baseball, which is really sad. I don't want to say goodbye to any of these, but
you've made that very clear.
Yeah, I would say goodbye to baseball only because it's so many games. And the games can be pretty slow.
You don't say.
So I'll keep the fast-paced ones, probably better chance of keeping my family going to them. I think that'll be fine.
There you go. Okay.
You?
All right. I mean, I'm not a hockey fan, so it's easy.
Yeah.
And even though I've become a baseball fan, yeah, if I had to get rid of one of the three remaining, it would be baseball.
Yeah.
And really probably football after that. So I actually have the order pretty well clear in my own mind. But whichever of those you would eliminate, we hope that this podcast has been useful to you. And if you ever play One Have to Go with podcasts,
make it difficult.
Don't make it this one. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Thank you.